One of the things I think really this report brought out is that there's so many nuances that as individuals across demographics, across the size of company, across the roles that they play within the company, there's very different attitudes toward meetings, toward different kinds of meetings, toward different kinds of collaboration. And so I think it's important that teams and organizations understand just how nuanced that is. Try to accommodate as best they can the different kinds of personalities. And a lot of that comes down to team norms and team understandings, meeting norms, communication norms. Okay, this is how we're going to operate internally and externally with customers.
The organizational composition, workforce composition is very different geographically, generationally, skill set wise. So understand what your audience is and then only. And that is also going to help both sides, employer and employee, do not demonize each other. If an employee can think about, oh, my leadership sucks, they don't know what I need, I'm not enabled to do my best work. And the organization leader might think, oh, my innovation pipeline is eroding and people just don't want to come into the office. So how do you really understand what the why of resistance is and come find a common ground? Because that's the only way you're going to be able to get the organizations.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are and wherever you're watching from. My name is Matt Pierce, host of the Visual Lounge. Today, we're going to be talking about flexibility in the workplace. TechSmith has just issued a new report about flexibility in the workplace, and it's got a ton of great information about that topic, because here's the reality. Things are changing, and things have changed a lot with, you know, the pandemic and people going, a lot of people getting to work remotely, and now there's a lot of return to office happening. What do people really need to be successful? So we got some experts here to help us out. So let's go ahead and introduce them. Kate Lister is president of Global Workplace Analytics, a consulting firm that has been helping organizations optimize distributed work strategies for nearly two decades. A highly regarded thought leader, Kate was one of only three witnesses invited to testify before a Senate committee on the future of remote work in government. Neeta Mehtab is the founder and CEO of Karyatid, a boutique workplace consultancy specializing in guiding organizations through the complexities of distributed and remote work transitions. With a focus on innovation workplace strategies, portfolio planning, and stakeholder engagement, Karyatid helps organizations to achieve desired business outcomes by improving employee collaboration and engagement in a digital-first world. Neeta specifically focuses on balancing the equation of employee and the employer in a digital-first and distributed work organization. With that said, please welcome Kate and Neeta to the Visual Lounge. Thank you for being here. Well, we're going to be talking today about the Workplace Flexibility Report. And before, as we kind of dive in here, I'm curious, let's get high level. What is this report kind of generally about? What should we be thinking about when we start reading the report?
Well, I think the idea to begin with was that the where of work has changed, but the how of work has not kept up. And so some of the difficulties that organizations are having is because of that, the practices and processes haven't changed. And a lot of it were problems that we had before the pandemic, but in that overnight shift to remote and hybrid work, it really revealed some of the troubles that were already there with meetings, with communication, with collaboration. It really brought it to light.
Yeah, it seems like everything just got put under a magnifying glass across, I mean, lots of things, obviously, during that time period. So from looking at the report, high level, are there big themes that you saw as we look through this that, you know, we should, like, if I'm interested in my company or organization doing kind of flexibility in my workplace or hybrid work, what were the, like, top maybe two or three big ideas that we saw?
You go, Neeta. Thank you, Kate. I think this is definitely a loaded question, but if organizations who are on the journey of transitioning to different ways of working post-pandemic, I would first encourage them to think about that hybrid or new ways of working is not a single answer. It's a spectrum, and wherever the organizations are going to be in their growth journey or their startup journey or their workforce distribution journey, they have to figure out that it's not employee versus employer, but it's how do we really effectively enable the work that is being done. And the tools and the processes are actually something that helps enable that. So being clear in that what that vision of organization is and aligning with that, how what employees are desiring to do in their effective ways of working, enabling that is organizational's first role, because organizations are nothing but a network of brains. And how do you manage that to maximize the performance or productivity and effectiveness is all when its employer and employee are in complete harmony. So that's one thing. And again, historically, organizations and employees have been reliant more on the meetings and collaboration, but mostly synchronous meetings and collaborations. But there are different ways of collaborating as well. And that is one thing I think this report really brings to life, that collaboration doesn't necessarily mean synchronous. There are various different ways to still enable collaboration and get the same result. And one of them is asynchronous collaboration.
Yeah, it does seem like that there's, particularly in the news, if we're, you know, I read enough of the news to know that, like, there's obviously during the pandemic, a lot of organizations were able to make that shift to, you know, mostly remote or fully remote. But now it feels like there's a lot of this return to office, the call, the pullback. And what it sounds like you're saying, though, is that, you know, you got to find the balance and the harmony that works for your organizations. And I'm curious, is organizations look at this, at whether you're CEO or maybe your employee saying, I want to advocate for this. How do you find that balance, though? Because I do feel like there really is this tension right now between a lot of organizations and their employees, because organizations are doing that pullback and employees are saying, well, wait a second, we were successful. So I guess what advice or what have we learned here that might be helpful? Because that does feel like a tension.
Well, I don't think you're ever going to have a perfect balance. There's going to be compromise on both sides. And I think the decisions have to be made around, as Netta said, what's the best thing for the organization? You know, how can we maximize the what's good for people and what's good for the organizational performance? You can't really do one without the other. And so there is going to be that tension. But one of the things I think really this report brought out is that there's so many nuances that as individuals across demographics, across the size of company, across the roles that they play within the company, there's very different attitudes toward meetings, toward different kinds of meetings, toward different kinds of collaboration. And so I think it's important that teams and organizations understand just how nuanced that is. Try to accommodate as best they can the different kinds of personalities. And a lot of that comes down to, we've talked about it in the report, team norms and team understandings, meeting norms, communication norms. Okay, this is how we're going to operate internally and externally with customers.
No, I totally agree. And I would like to add something there as well, Matt. I think the harmony is not a single state. Again, it's my pet peeve is that we can't just think about something that is achieved and then this is done for life. No, it's a constant work that organizations and employees both have to put in to maintain that. Like you work, put in work in relationships, you put in work in making friends as well. Similarly, that's one thing. The other thing I would say is also that no matter where and who you are in the world, we as a species like to have a choice. And when we are trying to take that choice away that the organizations or the employees have had during pandemic, the absence of why is really something that is creating a lot of resistance on the employee side. And I'm not saying that organizations are not able to come up with a why. Maybe they're not able to communicate effectively why from employees' perspective. That's one thing. And secondly, nobody has actually ever, if you want to go to a beach or if you want to go to a concert or if you want to meet with friends, you don't think about that, those nuances that maybe commuting a little bit or maybe, you know, actually getting the gas or charging your car. You look at an interaction as if something that is adding value to your life, that is something that is creating excitement. If you don't go and do that, then you're going to miss out on a good weather if you don't go to a beach or if you miss out on a concert if Taylor Swift is in town, you're going to miss out on it. So that creating that, and I'm using this word loosely, FOMO, that fear of missing out, but also that excitement that the organization needs to create to say, hey, you're coming into the office for this, why? But as you're going to be here, your day in a life journey is going to be more exciting because then you're going to share knowledge, you're going to collaborate more effectively, you're going to make decisions better and faster. And that's so employees go back with the more higher amount of retained energy, and they embrace that, and that gets incorporated into the work that they do until they are back into the office next time. So thinking about how the human brain works is very important to get people excited also to the work that needs to be done, that get if that work gets done better in the office. So I think there's something there to not only articulate the why, but also how do you create that program, that time in the office, so that people are finding that when they do that analysis in their mind is, why should I go? I can do that work at home. Then they get that excitement, and that brings that inertia gets created.
Yeah, I love that, right? That it's on the employer to be able to give to articulate that, but also to create that space so those things happen. So it's not just maybe the typical work, because I think, it makes a lot of sense that you got to engage the people to get them to want to come back, even if there's a kind of a natural tendency for some to want to. I want to bring up the report here, because I thought this was really interesting, and I know it's getting called out a couple different places. I just read a Forbes article that talks about the report, but this idea that I think it goes along with maybe the why a little bit, but that, you know, this idea that people are being asked to come back to the office or even to remote work, but we're not necessarily providing the resources to them to do that. And I'm curious, you know, one, why do we think that might be the case? And my theory is partly that I don't know that employees or employers know what they need and don't need, but two, what could we or should we be doing in this case to support both the companies and the individuals to be able to be more successful at this part of it, the how, because it feels like we haven't taught people how to work in this way. It's new. And so I don't know. Any thoughts?
The chart that you have up here is showing that 75% of companies have not established team norms, have not trained their managers to manage remote teams, have not changed their meeting norms to make sure that they're effective and inclusive, and haven't really adopted best practices. So those are pretty big things. 75% of companies haven't done this. But if you think back several years, this was sudden. It was overnight. If I was working with a company before the pandemic, we would have spent 6 months, maybe a year, doing this in a formal and intentional way and making sure that these things are done. But boom, overnight, everybody's working remotely. And then we're going to go back. This is, we'll be back in a month. We'll be back in 6 months. We'll be back in a year. And so we were kind of always in this triage mode of just getting through the day. And I think a lot of companies just kind of got stuck in that. So, okay, it's working pretty good now. But we are starting to see the cracks. And I think that that's what's causing some leaders to feel like they're out of control. And it's not the problem of hybrid work or remote work. It's the problem of how it was implemented. And so this is when we need to go back, and we need to make sure that managers know how to manage remote workers. Goes back long before the pandemic. Managers were used to managing by butts in seats, right? See the back of their head, they're working. No, the highest Amazon shopping takes place during working hours. So that wasn't working very well. And if your employees don't know, what their goals are, and they don't have the tools and the techniques to meet those goals, then you're not really managing your babysitting. But again, not company's fault. Most managers are brought up from being a doer. Oh, you're a good podcaster. We're going to put you in charge of 10 podcasters. No, thank you. Without providing you the training. And I think that's the step back that we need to do now. Nata, what do you think?
I could not agree with you more. It's a function of that. Are you really enabling and providing the right support system for the managers, people managers, and auto task managers that allows them to be not only set themselves up for success, but setting their teams up for success? Because in the end, we all know that performance management systems, the OKRs and KPIs and everything, and the metrics and everything, but if it's how is it really aligning with the goals of the organizations, that really becomes critical at the people managers level, because they're not only managing the upward leadership of the organization, but also the individual contributors and the teams that come together to execute the ideas, the plans, the design of the products and the services. So that ecosystem is only going to be more effective when we are actually strengthening that link, which is the people managers, through trainings, providing them right tools, right processes. And again, it comes from a position not that, let's train the employees, let's train the people managers to manage distributed teams or in-person teams. It's actually really training, developing that mindset that how to train the leaders managing through outcomes as well. And in doing so, what tools are needed? What processes are needed? And if, for example, I know that Kate says that the time is always, I totally agree that if a team is 7 continents away, 7 miles away, or 7 floors away, it's a distributed team. So that ecosystem is not a function of where and how many, but it's also how do you bridge that link between the people managers and the teams and managing effectively. So that's my two cents on that, Matt.
Yeah, well,
you know, we also learned in the pandemic early on, the people that were already working remotely, or you know, they were the one person that was on the Zoom call and everybody else was in the room. Suddenly, they felt included. They felt better about their position because it leveled the playing field. And we also learned a lot of things about how to conduct meetings that were fair and equitable. You know, if there's 10 people in the meeting and I can't see them, and maybe they can't even see me because you're using one screen at the front of a boardroom and all it has on it are my slides, then that's not very effective. I actually was doing a report back to a board of directors at the end of an engagement. It was like a 9-month engagement. And it was early in the pandemic, and we were talking about all these things, team norms, meeting norms, and how you need to conduct meetings differently, not because they're remote, but you need to conduct them differently anyway. And at the end of the meeting, I said, okay, I think you ought to rate each of your meetings at the end of the meeting, and I'm going to go first. I would give this one a 3 on a 10 scale, because I couldn't see anybody in the room. You couldn't see me when I was speaking, so you couldn't see those nuances because you were looking at the slides. I tried to interject at one point because a question was asked that I had an answer to, and I couldn't get a word in. I actually wound up texting the chairman and saying, hey, you know, could I answer that? That shouldn't be. So how do we equalize the playing field? How do we take those things that we learned during the pandemic and bring them into everyday work? And that's where the team norms and the meeting norms and the communication norms come in. You know, it might be assigning somebody that is not in the room as the moderator, because then they understand that position. It might be having a buddy system so that somebody who isn't in the room has somebody who is in the room that can, hey, would you mind interjecting for me? Rules like not having a side conversation with somebody. You know, I can't hear that side conversation. Always having your video on in the room so that I can see you and I can see the nuances of your behavior.
Yeah. Well, I know specifically people that I work with who were primarily remote, who they were overjoyed when everyone went remote because they're like, now I'm in, like, where meetings, and we didn't have the setup. We didn't have, like, now we're much more in a favorable position because I think we've worked hard. We've been very guilty of that specifically pre-pandemic. And I do think there's that great shift there. Now, you brought up meetings, and I do want to talk about meetings because as I looked at the report a little bit, it seems like and we've done some other reports about meetings, and meetings are kind of the things that we love to hate them because I feel like they take up a lot of time. A lot of meetings maybe feel ineffective. From kind of the two of your viewpoints, what did this report tell us about kind of meetings and this the flexibility and the kind of the different states that we're in with, you know, just how we handle meetings or how effective they are?
I'm happy to go. Yeah, I think that one of the main things that we learned from this report is that, first of all, yeah, people are spending almost equal, maybe slightly more time in virtual meetings, but almost equal time in virtual versus in-person meetings. However, when we dug deeper into what type of meetings are actually getting more attention or making people feel like they're getting higher value out of them, turned out, not to our surprise, was the decision-making meetings. And I know Kate and I have talked a couple of times about this as well, that it's a human nature that we try to make progress, we try to achieve and accomplish. So Decision-making meetings also help employees feel like they're actually working towards a certain goal as well. Now, of course, not all meetings can be decision-making meetings, but those are the type of meetings that need to have a better structure around them as well. If there's a brainstorming that needs to happen, is the brainstorming nature is something that can be done virtually? If not, if organization does not have those tools available, then yes, maybe in-person brainstorming will be more fruitful because you're going to be able to get more done. But however, there are status update meetings. More employees actually, or more respondents actually, expressed that the status update meetings are the biggest, the most of those meetings can actually be replaced by asynchronous meetings, asynchronous collaboration, or asynchronous methods of meetings. So these are some of the things that were very, as much as they were validation, they were also eye-opening that, hey, we are hearing some messages across all generations, across all company sizes. And I will let Kate go with her thoughts on that. But I think the intentionality of what the purpose of the meeting is, what the desired outcomes of the meeting is, and the tight and effective management of the meeting is very critical in actually making it more valuable to the participant.
Yeah, let me bring this up, Kate, so that we have it on screen. I hopefully this is helpful, because I do think it is interesting, just to comment real quick here, that like, even though the numbers are there, more people said decision making, still that number's not, to me it was like, oh, that's still not super high, right? It's valuable more so, but I just wanted to call that out because I do think there's still, like, I think a lot of people are still saying, well, meetings, but my guess is that's because they go to meetings that aren't what you just said, that they're structured and well-controlled and have, you know, a direct purpose. So,
but yeah, hey, they're the least disliked, you know?
Right.
It is pretty sad to see that, you know, the top rated meeting was only felt to be of high value by a quarter of the people. Now, if you look at that, again, nuances matter. If you look at that by age, younger employees find that some of these meetings are much more valuable than older employees. Status updates, for example. I don't exactly remember the number, but I think it's something like 50 to 55% of people said that they, of Gen Z, said that they valued status meetings highly. Well, why might that be? Because they're not in on the workings of the organization, right? They're not in on those high-level meetings where things are being done. So they need to be, you know, they need to be brought up to speed. And so as you look at how many meetings can we replace with asynchronous processes? And okay, listen, this is complicated data.
Yeah.
Help me out here, Netta. A third of respondents said they could replace a quarter or more of meetings with asynchronous methods. So asynchronous methods, what are we talking about? We're talking about sending an email. And that was the biggest choice for replacement was, couldn't this have been done in an email? But again, not for all. And so you need to, I think, have a mix of communications around meetings. You need to have recorded meetings. You need to have collaborative documents that you can think about and contribute to later. Meeting chat. You know, we all think very differently, and I'm an introvert, and a large half of the population is like me, and we don't speak up at meetings. We don't blurt. You know, we like to process. You know, if you say to me in a meeting, hey, Kate, what do you think about this? What do you think we should do? You know, I'm a little freaked. So we're losing a big part of the workforce by not giving them alternatives that work for the way that they think. You know, maybe I don't want to speak up, but I could put something in the chat. Or maybe I don't think as quickly as other people, and I want to, you know, I really want to have my facts straight before I say something. I can work on a collaborative document. So, you know, I think we need to look at each and every meeting and contributors to each and every meeting and type of meeting and say, does this need to be a meeting? Does everybody need to be in the room? Because clearly some people want to be and some people don't want to be. Could we use like an IA tool that allows me as a manager to just go in and see the portion that I want to see, or a summarizing tool that says, okay, here are the key takeaways. And if we're careful about the way we speak, you say something during a meeting like, and so I want to follow up on that in the next meeting. and artificial intelligence will then tag that as this is something you want to do at the next meeting. I think there's some real opportunity with artificial intelligence, as well as some concerns.
Go ahead, Kate. Sorry.
No, you go. No, I was just adding to your thought that most of that this is actually right. At least a quarter of the meetings, people express that they can be replaced with asynchronous methods. And if you just look at it across generations, email was most of the time millennials shows that emails or collaborative documents and the whiteboards, they can replace their synchronous collaboration. For Gen Z, it happened to be the top choice was to replace the synchronous methods was, guess what? Instant messages. Mm. We're so used to being on our social media and chat and everything. Like, that is the best way to replace the synchronous methods. It grabs their attention. It allows them to actually respond and take care of the matter right away. And that actually gets the... And think about that. The organizational culture is really important in that nature as well. When you have Teams or chat or anything on your phones available, you are available to everyone, walking, talking, living, breathing. So that actually gets it in faster as well. So I thought that was a very interesting fact that for Gen Z, which I know that is going to take a more significant portion of the workforce of the future, that became the first alternative for the synchronous collaboration. So it came to my mind, Kate, is why I spoke.
Yeah. And it's a habit too. You know, it's, oh, let's just jump on a meeting. Well, again, you have to think about it. One of the things we found that was pre-recorded video messages, which can add all that nuance of, you know, how I look and what I say and my emotion and everything to an email or to an instant message. But we're not used to working with them. And I think that the large majority of respondents here said that they like receiving video in messaging or images in messaging, but that I don't really like seeing myself on camera. I don't really like making them. I think I'm going to look silly. So there's training that's involved. You know, there's habits that need to be changed, and habits are hard. You know, think about what tomorrow when you take a shower. If you normally start at the top, try to start at the bottom, and just try to do that for a few days. I guarantee you, it's not going to be easy, and that's something as easy as taking a shower. So we need to break those habits.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying here, that there's this flexibility. Like, we're talking about, I mean, obviously flexibility in where you work and how you work. But I love that it's also thinking as someone who has a team that I manage, thinking about the, you know, I want to be careful when it comes to generational things, because I sometimes think we often lump people into generational things, and it's maybe, it would be nice if it was super clear cut, but I know it's not always. But I love the idea that, like, I should be thinking about, if I send a video, is there something else I should pair with it? Or if I send an email, should I be, you know, like giving them the option to be able to work in a way that also works best for them, not just what's convenient for me, which, I mean, I think about my long tenured career now at TechSmith, and oftentimes that's how I operate, unfortunately. I think about, like, well, it's easy for me to set up a meeting because that would be convenient, again, for me to have 8 people in a room, but the likelihood is probably not convenient for everybody. And so there's a lot here to unpack that I'm thinking about, like even the, you know, giving, and I'm also that kind of person who, I'm not a blurter in meetings. I'd rather sit quietly, think about it, maybe come back to it tomorrow. I appreciate that perspective and think just how important that is. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Also, you're the loudest voice in the room. You know, in when you're standing in a meeting, it's usually that dominant person that is doing all of the talking. Again, something I like about some of these AI tools, it's they tell you, okay, you spoke for 75% of the time during this meeting, and we didn't hear from any women during this meeting, and we didn't hear from anyone with a foreign language or a foreign accent. We didn't hear from, you know, whatever XYZ person, and it can actually prompt you now to say, this is what you should do. And that's the kind of real-time prompts I think we need to break some of these habits and diversify the thought pool. Because if we're only listening to the loudest voice in the room, we're not getting the real picture. We're not getting the benefit of a diverse workforce.
Yeah. Nida, you had something you wanted to add as well?
I was just going that we often think we often think that the flexibility, and lately we have only been putting flexibility of the workforce in the within the organizations into like number of days in the office to get wind at, okay, where people work, or number of hours, or percentage of the time being spent in the office or not. I think the equation is much more complex than that. It's not just a function of the how many days a week, which was designed and based on, you know, the industrial revolution and everything. When we had assembly line, these are the number of hours, these are the number of days that translates into number of units that gets produced. That's not how the knowledge market and the service market works these days. So, and also every type of employee, based on where they are in their journey of life or the journey of professional life, brings different value to the table as well. So it's also providing flexibility to not only 5 days a week worker or 9 to 5 kind of worker, but also where people are in their life and in their professional journey. For instance, giving people options for a work on demand. And I know that we have been hearing a lot about that, how the future is also gig economy and everything. How do we actually prepare organizations for that level of flexibility? Giving some seasonal summer hours. We know that in Europe, it's a very big thing about taking a month or a few weeks off in summertime to be able to really enjoy and live a little. So that's one of the ways. Gradual retirement, giving that option, which is actually really good for the organization and also an employee, because the knowledge management and knowledge transfer becomes a key ingredient in when hands are changing from knowledge perspective. So that gives the employee an opportunity to transfer knowledge to the new person coming into their role. And that helps organizations to have a seamless transition of knowledge as well. Shift swapping or self-rostering. I know that right now, most of the people listening to this are maybe talking, we're talking about the knowledge workers and all that, but there's a significant workforce of that is made up of the essential workers. Their jobs are not, they're tethered to a location, that they're tethered to a certain nature of infrastructure, or that's why they need to be in the office. But it doesn't mean they cannot experience a certain type of flexibility. They should be able to pick their schedule or swap their shifts. So I think as an industry, we should also think about that flexibility also comes in a lot of different shades and versions and time, and look at the whole picture and see what is the composition of my workforce or my organization and how I can enable that, give them choice and flexibility in how they work. So that's one thing I just want to have that thought on the table for people who are listening or reading as well, to keep in mind that it's not just tied to a number of days and number of hours or where people work, but it's much bigger than that.
And the when. People have, it's shown for years in the research that people value being able to shift when they work as much or even more than where they work. There was a research project done with call center agents that were finally given the ability to choose when they take their own breaks. And productivity went up significantly because of that, because of just having that little bit of control. I mean, you think about it like a Saturday. It's like, oh, I can't wait till Saturday. Well, good chance you've got errands to run. You've got things to do. You're not just going to play all day. But you're looking forward to it because you're in control. You can decide when you go to the dry cleaner. You can decide when you do this. And we need to be thinking about time flexibility in the same way as flexible place. What a lot of companies are doing is going to core hours. So everybody has to be available between, say, 10 and 12 Eastern for meetings and collaborations. And what that also does is gives people quiet time when they can feel like they can focus and they can actually get work done. A lot of the stress that we're feeling now is because we're just in this constant meeting mode, which leaves us then working at night on weekends to just actually get something done.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating conversation because there's so many things, so many big ideas here, right? There's a lot that I think we need to start thinking about as organizations, how we can change. And I love that approach and thinking not just the when, but all these other pieces, how you're doing your work, where you're doing your work, and obviously all the nuance. Kate, I think you kind of brought up nuances many times throughout the different pieces, but the nuances of how you do your work on a regular basis feels like it's really coming out of this. And hopefully anyone listening to this and it will have some more control. It's making me even think that one of the challenges I face is, you know, I've got my routine that I've done for so long because, you know, being that person who's worked for almost 20 years at the same company, it's really hard for me. And I don't maybe expect the people I work with that same standard of like 8 to 5, but like, it's hard for me to break that, like that idea that I'm in this chair. This is what I'm doing. I'm work. This is work. Right. And so I think there's probably lots on both organizational side, leadership side, but also from an employee standpoint, for anyone with like tenure, which, you know, keeping in mind the, you know, the younger employees, it's maybe less challenging, or maybe that's why they're able to be a little bit more flexible in thinking. But so, yeah, it's a super interesting conversation. As we get close to wrapping up, are there any key ideas or themes that we missed that you feel like you'd be remiss if we didn't just mention?
I'll let you go first, Kate.
No.
And if not, that's okay. We've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah. Yeah, something we didn't cover was the whole travel issue, which I found very interesting, that people that would be willing to travel to a meeting, whether if it was within a 2-hour drive, if it was more than a 2-hour drive or commute, if it was required international travel, if it required domestic travel. Oh, good. Thank you. It's much easier to describe with the chart here. And most, again, it depends on who it is. For example, the younger generation is more willing to travel to international flights. Why is that? Well, maybe they've never been to Paris. Maybe they don't have the obligations at home that somebody with children, for example, would have. Well, if we know that, why don't we intentionally cultivate those opportunities for them? Why don't we make everybody's life better by giving people the options of attending virtually or attending in person? You know, I think to the day where I'm doing a PowerPoint presentation and my keyboard starts to shake and it says, you know what? You're not very good at this. And did you know that we've got 20 vetted contractors that could do this for you much more quickly? And did you know that Matt just did a podcast on this and you could go look at some of the materials that he has? We don't have that internal knowledge, what would you call it, network right now, but we will. And I think where we're going is with sort of the consumerization of work. We've consumerized everything else, that the day where I get to bid on the work that I do within a company and even outside of the company, where I get to do what I'm best at most of the time, and somebody else does the things that they're best at. Some people really loves to work under stress and big deadlines. And I'm, no, please. And it's like, go for it, Netta. You just go, girl. But knowing that about each other is just so important to how we live our lives and to our work-life balance, to our stress, to our well-being, and to the benefit of the organization.
Yeah, it's the personalization of work, right? And we see that coming in lots of things. So I love that you're thinking about it for this as well. Netta, anything else you would add that we haven't talked about?
I do. So one of the things I want to bring your attention to is also that what we learned, which was really to our surprise, that 7 out of 10 respondents use video messaging sometimes or often in their work. And another 22% are interested in trying it. And that comes, I think there's just, this is a sign of how people are wanting to engage in tools that are more interactive and engaging, and that allows them to also bring their self to work as well. Because again, all your senses are immersed when you are doing a video message or when you are seeing a video message, minus one or two. Of course, you cannot smell and you cannot touch. But the whole point is that the industry, the work culture is evolving. It's becoming more immersive. It's becoming more engaging and interactive. And that is one thing I think we had a client once, we were doing change management for them, and turned out that when we were getting them to think about change management, what was the first thing that came to everyone's mind was, oh, communication plan. And then also the first challenge that came to everyone's mind is that nobody reads what we sent. So, but being a change agent is also like thinking about that, okay, there's such a disconnect. And as a change manager also, or even as a workplace leader or an organizational leader, how do you bridge that gap? You want to engage your organization. You also want to make sure the information gets transferred. What is the right tools and method and processes for that? So
And what comes really, what becomes very important in all that process is that knowing who your audience is. So every organizational composition, workforce composition is very different geographically, generationally, skill set wise. So understand what your audience is and then only. And that is also going to help both sides, employer and employee, to not demonize each other. Because an employee can think about, oh, my leadership sucks. They don't know what I need. I'm not enabled to do my best work. And the organization leader might think, oh, my innovation pipeline is eroding and people just don't want to come into the office. So how do you really understand what the why of resistance is and come find a common ground? Because that's the only way you're going to be able to get the organizations move faster, which will eventually help economy and the bigger society. So that's just my two-pronged answer. Not demonize each other, but understand where the employer and employees are.
I think we also need to act with science. I like your points too, but I think we need to stop going with gut. And we see so many leaders saying, oh, everybody needs to come back to the office because we're not as productive, because we're not as innovative, because our culture is suffering. Really? How do you know that? Because the research shows none of that is true. And most often, I've never had a leader come back to me and actually give me evidence of those things. It's just, I just feel that way. You know, that's not fair to your people, and it's not fair to the organization. It's not fair to your shareholders.
Yeah, well, I love these points as kind of final points, especially the video messaging as a company that works for a tool that we make a tool that does that. But I do think there's something there that, you know, to that point, Kate, about science, like we often are leaning into things by gut. And I think that's just, you know, I think, you know, I've read lots of management and leadership books, and oftentimes the kind of the secret thing is that someone's got a really good gut for feel. But you're right. Like, it's not sustainable. It's not transferable. It's also oftentimes not accurate. But I do also love that we put that to Nida, your point about just people are willing to explore and try. I think people want to make this work, right? Like, despite like what we hear in the news and kind of the conflicts that are happening, come back to the office, I don't want to come back to the office. I think people want to try new things. They want to be connected in their work. This is not to me, you know, the people I work with, it's not like, well, I don't want to do crappy work. I don't want to do bad work. I don't want to be unconnected, but I also don't want to do things I don't want to spend time in meetings that I don't need to be in. I don't want to spend time on reading long emails that someone could have summed up for me or whatever it might be.
And the conversation is always made to be polar. We either have to be all remote or you have to be all in the office. And we have to stop thinking about or and stop thinking about and. How do you make the mix? The majority of people for the 18 years that I've been studying this say that they would like to work face-to-face about half of the time. And guess what? That's about where we're ending up. So, you know, let's stop being polar about it and find a middle ground that works for the organization and works for the people.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up there. But before we do that, let's have you both just share, if people wanted to connect with you, they want to learn more about your work, or maybe they want to hire you for anything, where should people connect with you and find you?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for being with us today and listening to our little banter. It's been fun doing this study with Kate Lister and really thank you to TechSmith to be able to really give us that opportunity. If you guys want to connect with me, I would love to hear where you are as an organization, as an employee. Please follow this link and connect with me on LinkedIn. We can exchange message. If you are in the Bay Area, I would love to grab coffee, or we would love to just have an immersive conversation, if nothing else. So if you want to go to a website, it's www.karyata-space.com, and we help organizations in their workplace strategy, portfolio planning, change management, basically helping in the workplace, in real estate, and culture lifecycle. So I'm looking forward to having a lot more conversation with you all. Thank you.
Perfect. And Kate, how about you? How can people connect with you?
I'm pretty easy to find. Connect with me on LinkedIn. It's nice if you tell me why you want to connect. But to be honest, I like to connect with people that are outside of this discipline so that I get kind of a more diversified understanding of what's going on in the market. So connect with me on LinkedIn. I was one of the early adopters, so it's just /in/Kate Lister. And of course, our website, globalworkplaceanalytics.com. We help organizations get hybrid right. I mean, that's really where we're focused right now, because they need so much help
in optimizing the way and the where and the when people are working.
Perfect. Well, I want to thank you both so much. I know this is it's a big deal to take this much time out of your very busy schedules, and I just appreciate you and appreciate all the work that you did to help with the report and all the great insights that you shared today. Because there's, you know, I've read the report a couple times. I feel like I need to go back and read it now again with new eyes after having talked to you. So
me
thank
too.
You both.
Just know that there's a lot of things we also talked about today that were not necessarily in the report as well, but was really a good lens or either grounding or context or taking the report to the next level thinking, so that once people will either read the report and hear this or hear this and read the report, are going to find the connection. So just an FYI.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to thank Tech Smith for making it possible and to having the vision and allowing us to help in crafting that vision, and, you know, even outside of the sponsorship, help craft the questions and help co-create it.
I mean, what great information. If you're thinking about working in a hybrid setting and you want to get that better, you want to make it the best it can be, there's so much great information in the flexibility report. Go download it. Go read what it says. There's great stuff about generational things, great stuff. There's best practices in there. I've got to mention that, you know, just some of it was surprising to me that once you see it put together, like how people really feel about some of these things. What are some of the thoughts around the how and the why, and some of the just kind of thoughts around, you know, what is effective, what doesn't feel like is effective right now. Of course, we always like you to like and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. We'd love to hear from you. If you got feedback for us, you can always email us at thevisuallounge@techsmith.com. Of course, whether you're talking about and thinking about flexibility in your workplace, or you're thinking about making videos, thinking about how you can apply images, we hope you always are getting a little bit better and better and better. We hope our TechSmith tools help you in that process in some way. But, you know, in that time, make sure you're giving yourself some space to take a little time to level up every single day. Thanks, everybody.